Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Nick Winman. How are you, Nick?
I'm fine, Chris, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. And we're sitting in your, not quite your vineyard, in the tasting room, I think, at Albury Vineyards in Surrey, not Sussex. I said Sussex last week, but it's Surrey, and... I'm just looking out on your vineyard here, because it does roll down the hill and all that. Your row spacings are actually quite close. Have you got much mechanisation going on? It's too narrow to get a tractor up there.
No, we have a tractor that goes up that.
That must be a tractor on a diet.
Yeah, it is. It's a skinny tractor, unlike me. They're 2 metre. I think on hindsight, we probably would have gone for 2.2 metres to give us a little bit more room. But 2 metres, 2.2 metres is pretty standard in the UK for planting.
Oh, okay, that's all right then. I was just worried it looked a little bit tight, but
it can be a bit tight with some of the things we put on the back of the tractor. Yeah, but generally it's fine.
The reason I noticed is we're going to talk a wee bit about some of the input costs, and one of the big costs for any vineyard is the cost of labour. Really, isn't it? It's a ferociously expensive thing employing people.
Well, it is here, especially being organic, because we do pretty well everything by hand. We use a tractor and sprayer to spray the vines. Still trying to convince my vineyard manager that we ought to get in a cart horse, but she doesn't seem terribly happy with that idea. labour can be an issue. It's a cost that we have to manage carefully.
Yeah. And how do you source your labour in? Because if you look at the vineyard cycle, you've got a big chunk of work, obviously, at harvest. You've got a big chunk of work after harvest around the middle of winter where you're doing winter pruning. You mentioned last week that you may or may not do a green harvest as well, which probably doesn't need a lot of labour because you just cut it and chuck it on the ground sort of thing. But those two, is there any other big time that you need a lot of labour?
Well, there's quite a lot of what we call canopy management that takes place. So as the vines grow, that growth has to be controlled and managed.
Yeah.
So, for example, there are probably a couple of times during that period where we strip off leaves from around the grapes to make sure that they get the right amount of sun.
Yeah.
That's particularly important also for us to prevent disease, because we need to get the air moving through the vines. So that's a key time. One of the next things that will happen after we get bud burst is that you get bud burst on the trunks, and all of the buds have to be taken off the trunks. So that's something also that's done by hand.
Oh, okay. And the trouble with the trunks in particular is probably that they're not the right grape variety. They're the rootstock.
Well, the rootstock's below, but you just got to, you don't want shoots coming out of the trunks, because you want all the energy going into the canes that are going to produce the fruit. And also, if you have them coming out of the trunks, they're going to be all over the place, and you won't be able to get the tractor up and down. So it's
your narrow spacings.
Okay.
And where do you get your staff from?
Well, in common with all vineyards in the UK, we use contract labour. Without contract labour in the UK, there would not be a business in viticulture. Because, as you mentioned, the nature of the work that needs to be done on vineyards is you need to do a lot of work all at once.
Yeah, it's really lumpy, isn't it?
It's really lumpy. And we use contract labour, some guys and girls from Romania who've been doing that work in the UK for probably the past 20 years. And we might get sort of 10 people in, or 15 people even at a time on a day to do a job. And like farming generally, when something needs doing, you've got to do it straight away. And particularly on an organic vineyard, you can't afford to say, oh, I'll do it next week or I'll do it next month. It has to be done now. And then we've got the weather to worry about, so it has to be done on a day. Maybe pruning, for example, we wouldn't prune when it's raining. So you have to prune on days when it's not raining. It can't leave it until next week or tomorrow. If it's not raining, you've got to get on with it, same as spraying. So we're very, very fortunate to have these teams of Romanians in the UK who do this lumpy work for us.
Yeah, there's a couple of companies you mentioned that you use.
We use Vine Care. There's also Vine Works. So they're UK companies, and they manage the provision of this labour.
Okay, and it's not, but that's not your only source of labour, is it?
Where we can, we use local labour, and we've got a particularly strong wine club here, and we have quite a lot of volunteers. That particularly happens during the harvest. So we have a couple of days of the harvest where we get maybe as many as 50 or 60 volunteers in on a day to help us pick the grapes. Yeah. They're not as productive as the Romanians, I have to say, but we're delighted to have them here.
Yeah, I suppose that does two things, though. First of all, it helps build a relationship with the people who are going to buy your product, so they're going to become more of a brand ambassador if they feel they've got a commitment to the product.
Definitely. I think that wine sales here, and we do sell a lot to the public, probably 25-30% of all of our wine gets sold to the public. But when they come to the vineyard, it's all about an experience. It's not just the wine. I mean, the wine needs to be good, or else they won't bother coming at all. But people come here looking for an experience, and yeah. Part of that experience is maybe working on the vineyard, maybe it's a tour where they're learning something about viticulture, maybe they're learning a bit more about English wine generally, maybe it's a walk, which they love to do, as people love walking around the vineyard. So you're quite right, it spreads the word. What we focus on very much is people getting a complete experience here on the vineyard.
Yeah, exactly. You said that a lot of your lumpy work, where you just need a large chunk of people to do a particular job, you said they came from Romania, which is great. You know, I suppose you don't care really where they come from as long as they do the job. But the UK, when we leave Britain, will obviously have quite a different relationship with Romanians who can come in because they're EU citizens. There's no real issues there. Do you think Brexit could be an issue for you?
Well, maybe naively, we're sort of thinking not really. Clearly, it will change the relationship with the. At the moment, the Romanians have free access into the UK. Prior to them being members of the EU, though, there was an agricultural agreement between the UK and Romania and Poland as well, I think, whereby they could work in this country for up to 6 months a year. And really, it's not just viticulture which is dependent on contract workers. It's the whole of the soft fruit industry in the UK and some vegetables like asparagus, for example, that just would not exist without contract labour. The labour is just not available in the UK. People don't want to do the work. So I have to believe that a solution will be found to that problem.
Especially because even though it's people go on about unemployment rate, but I think our unemployment rate in the UK is like 4 or 5%, and economists would typically call that full employment. I know people don't necessarily believe it, but
well, and I think whilst obviously you do get the odd person who's very happy to work on a vineyard, to find 10, 20, hundreds, thousands of people, tens of thousands of people maybe during the harvest to do that in the UK is just not viable. It's not going to happen. People generally don't want to do that type of work, which is very hard.
What about students? I'm from New Zealand, and a lot of students from my town used to go up Central Otago, and they would do the summer doing picking apricots, cherries, I imagine when I was younger, even now, probably grapes, etc. So students used to be a huge source of picking.
I think all of our students go to places like New Zealand to do the picking rather than do it here. we did try that a few years back, and I remember I was out of the country and I had somebody looking after the vineyard for me because my daughter had said, "Oh, Dad, I can get a load of friends to do some work on the vineyard." You
know? And I think, "Dad's not here, it's party time."
The problem was that sort of, they and this friend of mine said, "Well, yeah, they're doing an okay job, Nick, but they're nowhere near as productive. You know, they're probably about half as productive as the Romanians." And I think they're just not used to doing that sort of work, and it's just difficult to find people who are prepared to do it, to be honest. If you're doing it in New Zealand, it's a holiday anyway, you need some money to earn your keep, and the sun's probably shining a bit more than it is here.
Up central it's very nice weather. Well, almost too hot sometimes.
But we have tried, and it's just not practical to use local labour to do the big jobs around the vineyard. We, as I say, we use a lot of local people come and help us. But if you want to be certain that you've got 10 people next Thursday who are going to do a particular job, you have to use the guys from Romania.
And some of the work is quite skilled, so...
Well, that's the other thing, is that they, you know, these people do it for a living, and when they arrive, they know what they're doing. If you were going to use local people, you would have to do a lot of training, and that's very time-consuming for a vineyard our size. You know, it's just not viable, really.
I remember working as a student. You know, I never did picking because I used to have summer jobs, different summer jobs. But I remember when I was in engineering school one winter doing winter pruning, and there was a gang of us, and a guy got us in to do his vineyard. And it was, I don't know, it took us about a week to do the winter pruning on his place, so I'm not sure. And there was a gang of about 8-9 of us doing it. And once we'd finished his vineyard, we just went around. He just hired us out to do loads of other vineyards because he now had a team who knew what they were doing.
I think that obviously worked well. But pruning is quite, it's quite a skilled job.
Oh, yeah, we didn't do the cutting.
We did the tying
up and the removing.
So, yeah, I guess, that's a possibility. But really, if you can imagine the effort saying, okay, over the next 2 weeks, and it's only over the next 2 weeks, I want 10 people on 2 days to do this work. Organising that locally would be really quite hard, and I think impossible to actually, achieve it in an economic way. Whereas I can make one phone call and I've got 10 people here next week and 10 people the week after who know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. It's just an ease of business, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was actually listening to The Economist. They do a... Yeah, The Economist magazine. They also do a podcast, if you know how to get hold of it, that you can listen to the entire Economist for free. If anybody's interested, come write me an email and I'll tell you how to do it. But they were talking about when America had a very similar scheme, an agricultural scheme, where Mexicans were allowed to come into America to do agricultural work for a period of time and then go back. And JFK, there was talk that suppressed wages, etc. And some economists went back and had a look at it, and they found that there was no real difference to wages. Once they got rid of the Mexicans, the wages didn't go up or anything like that. What happened was that there was a substitution for mechanization and a substitution in terms of the products that they produced. So in America, California at the moment, there's a lot of people planting almond trees because almond trees can be easily harvested, whereas soft fruits, as you're saying, really have to be very carefully hand-harvested.
Mm.
But we're about to have a new wave of artificial intelligence and robots that are going to be pretty clever, who will be able to pick all day and all night, hand picking as well, and doing a lot of quite sophisticated jobs in the winery. If we do go down this road of not being able to source immigrant labours, and you think that maybe the locals aren't quite as keen for the work at the price point that you want to pay, do you think there's another wave of mechanisation that you could see in the vineyard?
Well, there are some things, maybe not associated with these contract workers. For example, cutting the grass. Is somebody on a tractor at the moment sort of going up and down the rows? But there are machines now being developed which are automated robots to do that, which were quite interesting. I think for a vineyard like ours and producing sparkling wine, it's quite difficult to see a huge amount of additional automation. I mean, for a start, we are selective when we pick the grapes. So if there's any disease, then we can, as we pick, we can decide not to to pick that fruit. It's essential to hand pick generally for sparkling wine because you do what's called whole bunch pressing, and you can't use a machine to do that because that will break the skins and it's not good for sparkling wine.
Yeah.
So all vines in the UK are hand picked, apart from I think Denbigh's, who have a machine to pick some of their still wine. So, look, I'm sure there will be more and more ways of adding some automation. It's probably not what we're about here. We like to do things by hand. But obviously, you have to use... you've got to be sustainable from an economic viewpoint as well. And I think that, if we did not have access to contract labour, probably viticulture would die and people would plant something else here.
Well, that's what they're doing in the States with the move to almonds and away from soft fruits, because it's a high value product.
It just wouldn't be viable in this country at the moment, at least, anyway.
Yeah, okay. All right. Oh, well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Let's hope a solution is found.
Yeah. One of the things you do produce here, or you don't produce here, but next door, is some wine-based alcoholic beverages that aren't wine. What are you making?
Well, we've made a couple of things. We're focused on sparkling wines here, and when you make sparkling wine, quality sparkling wine, you only use the early pressings of grape juice, which are you press very softly, and the early juice is the best quality juice. And then after a certain point in time, you wouldn't use the juice for sparkling wine any longer.
What are they called? They're called Thai. What's the two? There's the I've forgotten the name.
It is Thai, and I forget the other two as well at the moment.
That's all right.
We can say first and second pressings.
First and second pressing.
Yeah. So what we do with our pressings that we're not going to use for the sparkling wine, we make some wine from it, and then we give it to the distillery next door.
Silent Pool,
yeah, our neighbours. And they distill it, and then we put it into to French oak barrels, and it ages in the French oak barrels, and then we sell it as a brandy. It's a tiny amount that we produce. We only have a few hundred bottles each year, and it's all sold from the cellar door here at the vineyard. Normally release it in November, and it's all gone for Christmas. It's an ideal Christmas present.
But
we've been really pleased with it. One year we did produce something a little different, in that we had some of our Saval. We have a grape variety on the vineyard called Saval. Most of our grapes are the traditional champagne grape varieties, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier, but we have a bit of Saval, and it didn't ripen very well one year. And we decided it wasn't good enough for our sparkling wine blend, so we distilled that, and it produced a grappa-style tasting spirit. It's not grappa, because we didn't make it the same way. And we called that Attila's Bite. Attila is the name of our dog on the vineyard. It's a Parson Russell Terrier. And that also was extremely extremely popular. We like to do something, you know, a little bit different each year if we can.
Why don't you make a grappa every year? Because you will have... Grappa is really what's the manky stuff left over. You must have waste product, and it's best to use the waste.
Well, we do, but we just don't have enough of it, really, to make it viable to produce any sort of volume. At the end of the day, there are costs running the distillery, so, you know, we in effect have the use of the distillery for a day or so, and the tiny volume that we would have of the waste product. So what we do with our skins, our grape skins, is that we use them to help us make a compost. Which we spread on the vineyard. So we make a compost from the grape skins, from chippings, from the vines, from the prunings, and also some biodynamic muck from the buffalo from Laverstoke Park, which is interesting, and some green waste compost. So they don't go to waste. We use it, but it's just not enough to make a wine from for us, or spirit for us.
I wonder if Silent Pools have ever thought about just sourcing from the local vineyards to get enough volume to create a grappa or a...
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I haven't thought of it before, but now you mention it, I'll discuss it with the other local vineyards and see if there's a possibility. It's quite nice. Maybe we could have a Surrey grappa, although we probably can't call it grappa. We'd have to call it something else, but that's quite an interesting idea.
And also, after your fermentation, you still press the skin, so you get the skins afterwards anyway, so they've lost a little bit of sugar, but you've still got all the material for your composting.
We do, that's exactly right, No, you're quite right. Nice idea. Nice idea. Perhaps that will make all the difference in us making some money this year.
All right, Nick. All right. I think we're gonna wrap it up there. And thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for the coffee as well.
Chris, thank you very much for coming.
Cheers very much.